Start with House Bill 2221. We'll do a public hearing on that. Teresa Douglas.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, committee members. My name is Teresa Douglas, and I'm a member of the Governor's Advisory Committee on DUAI, and I'm here to represent the committee on behalf of House Bill 2221. This bill basically increases the fee for the assessment and monitoring of DUAI diversion and conviction. This fee has not been increased since 1992. And, of course, the cost of providing services to the DUI clients has increased since 1992. And so we would ask for your support of this bill and that it be passed to the floor with a due pass recommendation. That concludes my testimony. If you have any questions, I'd be glad to answer those.
All right. Have you seen the A4 amendments?
Just briefly.
Okay. All right. Council?
Chairman, you want me to go through the...
I think the bill is pretty simple. You might want to go through the amendment.
Okay. The bill is, again, just raising from $90 to $130 the fee for the diagnostic and screening tests, and then monitoring the treatment on a DUI diversion. The A4 amendment would add to the bill, not take away from it, would not replace it, but would add to it, and would set standards for persons who are... serving as judges for the Supreme Court, the Court of Appeals. I think there's the Circuit Court and the Tax Court in Oregon, that a person would not be eligible to be elected or appointed as a judge of any of those courts if that person at the time of the election or appointment has two or more convictions for DUII, including a conviction that would be DUII if it was in another state.
This for the committee. This is the chair's amendment, and I checked with the judicial department. There is only one judge in the state of Oregon, and I do not know the person's name who would fit this particular category.
Could I ask a question?
Sure.
Mr. Chair, since this is your amendment, would you like to give us some background as to why you think this bill is necessary?
Well,
this amendment is necessary.
Yeah, I do, actually. It just appears to me that when you have individuals sitting, presiding over cases, who have to be judges, supposedly imparting justice to our citizenry, that they ought not be persons who have been convicted of DUII, particularly three times. Remember, you get one diversion, and this is the third time you've been arrested, so that person ought not sit in judgment of other people. So that's the basic rationale.
Are judges prohibited from serving on the bench for other crimes?
Not yet.
I don't know. I'm
not sure.
Brad, do you know? Can you be a judge if you're a convicted murderer?
Actually, it is, for the record, my name is Brad Swain. I'm the State Court Administrator's Office. It is a violation of the Code of Judicial Ethics to be convicted of a crime, and you can be removed from the bench for certain kinds of offenses. And that's under JR1 of the Code of Judicial Conduct.
Right.
It's not, I don't know whether...
That occurs after you're already in office,
right,
though. This precludes...
I don't know of any, off the top of my head, I don't know of any law that precludes somebody from being a judge because of a conviction for...
felony? So you can have a convicted felon?
Well, I would suspect that if somebody were running and the felon...
amendment doesn't go far enough.
I did notice that you didn't pick up municipal or justice court judges.
I mean, it's clearly an error from legislative counsel.
and Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I looking at Section 2, qualification of judges, and this is for the Supreme Court, and as I recall, looks like it says the judge of the Supreme Court should be citizens of the United States and shall have resided in the state at least 3 years next preceding their election or appointment. All persons elected judges of the Supreme Court must at the time of their election have been admitted to practice, so they have to be practicing attorneys in Oregon. And then for qualifications, for a court of appeals, a judge of the county court of appeals shall be an elector of the county of the residence of the judge and be admitted to the practice of law in the state. I don't see anything about prior convictions. And I would say also that Mr. Swank brings up a good point that the legislature is not in the business of disciplining judges once they're in office. That's for the judicial branch to do. So this would be for qualification rather than discipline.
Otherwise, you have a separation of powers argument.
Right.
All right. Everybody happy?
Well.
Sure. Senator Ringo.
Well, I am ambivalent, and I guess, as I've said before, I don't think we need to tolerate drunk driving. But on the other hand, judges are just people. They're human. And in a lot of ways, it's good to have judges who understand the grimy side of life, as long as that doesn't deter from their ability to carry out their duties. And I guess particularly since there's no timeline, if somebody has a rough period of time when they're in their 20s, I don't know why that should prevent them from being a judge when they're in their 50s. I guess
I would just add that police officers cannot be police officers if they have convictions for certain types of criminal episodes in their life, whether they were teenagers or not, sex crimes in particular, drug crimes, felony crimes.
DUIs.
You know, DUI, I'm not sure. I think that's a DPSST question. In fact, I think last session we deferred that judgment to DPSST in the rulemaking process, and they by rule exclude most of those categories today. So DUII maybe, but I don't know, because they do the same thing. If they get a DUII, we do the diversion thing. So.
Well, I just expressed my hesitation, and I will, if this is important to you, I will vote yes.
Thank you. God bless you.
I have another question.
Okay, another question.
Just to be clear, if you go for diversion, that's not a conviction. Is that true?
Mr. Chairman, that's correct.
So you'd have to be arrested 3 times in order to qualify. Once is a diversion, so that wouldn't count. So then it would be another event and another event. And then you would qualify for this.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Walker, I mean, assuming that your first arrest was diversion eligible, meaning you didn't have any prior 10 years, within the last 10 years, you didn't have a charge pending, you did not cause injury in the accident, you did not cause death, something like that. Those are not eligible, but that would be a small percentage of arrests. So assuming you are diversion eligible, you complete diversion successfully, that goes as... It actually does show on your record, it says diversion. That is not a conviction.
Mm-hmm.
Then you'd have, one, then you could be convicted for DUII once after that, twice after that.
Okay, and I guess I have another question. Has this been a problem? You indicated, Mr. Chair, there's only one judge that would be affected by this. Has this been a problem that you are aware of? Or is it just something is this one judge that you want to get after?
No, because this, I don't think, affects that particular judge because he's already in office.
Okay.
This would preclude someone from being appointed, so that's the issue. But for me, I do know a number of judges. There are some I consider to be outright drunks, but most of them walk and don't drive. They just have the wisdom to do that. So
we're not going after a wooey.
A wooey?
Oh, wooey, walking under the...
No. But if they ride a bicycle or not a skateboard, they're in deep trouble. I just think it's a good public policy statement to say that if you're a judge, you ought not have been convicted 3 times or arrested 3 times for DUI, and then sit in judgment of other individuals.
Mr. Judge, how about these tax court judges? I mean, they...
Which ones?
Including tax court judges. They're...
I want tax court judges to be...
accounting geeks that are very, very bright people.
I want them to be sober.
It's probably easier to do their job if they're...
This is getting interesting. And you didn't want to include the other judges, huh?
You know, it just flat out. Legislative Council, no, you blew it.
I must have blown it. We could certainly do that.
I don't want to bring this back. I want to do a work session. I want to get it out of my way.
Mr. Chairman, having not heard any of the testimony on the bill,
the A4 amendment.
Move the Dashboard amendment.
Mr. Chairman, I move the Dashboard amendment.
Senator Farioli, courtesy to the chairman of the adoption of the Dashboard amendments. Discussion beyond what we've already had. No discussion?
Well, the merits of the main bill would be to increase the fees, and I don't see a problem with that. The program should be funding itself.
Any objections to the motion? No, motion passed.
Mr. Chairman, I move House Bill 2221 to the floor as amended with the due pass recommendation.
Senator Farioli moves House Bill 2221 to the floor of the Senate with a due pass recommendation. Any additional discussion? You like raising fees?
Yeah, I like that part of it.
All right. Any further discussion? Any objection to the motion? Objection. And I'll carry it.
I hope so.
Senator Ringo.
Just a clarification on what we just did. If there are judges out there with two DUIs,
two?
I was
a diversion and a conviction.
Let's say they have a diversion and one DUI on their record. So one more and they fall in this category.
Go bango bongo.
So I am curious as to how many, do we know how many judges are out there driving around right now? That with one more DUI and they're disqualified.
You know, I didn't ask that question. We could ask. Get that information back. I don't know how many of them have, you know, a diversion and one subsequent conviction that would qualify upon the next. We could ask Brad to see if he can find that information for us. Can you do that?
We actually don't track criminal records of judges unless they reported to us, because it's a matter for the election or for somebody to file with the
Judicial Fitness Commission.
Judicial Fitness Commission.
Do they have that information?
They may be able to get it from, I mean, it would be something that you would pick up from going through LEDs. If you've got a particular name or something you wanted to go, but we don't have LEDs access in our office. Some courts do, but our agreements limit our ability to use that information.
Okay. How many?
Except for judicial proceedings.
How many judges would we be running LEDs checks on, if you want?
Well, there are 100 and I think it's 83 elective judicial positions in the Oregon judicial branch. We're not exactly sure how many municipal and justice court judges we've got,
but we've got
about 160. No, you didn't. Well, you said judges. I didn't know which judges you meant. But that's,
I meant the ones that impacted by this bill.
Okay, and there's a tax court judge. We've got about 180, roughly. That's 183 of the current positions.
Mr. Chairman, I withdraw my motion. Never mind.
Authority is too late. All right, we've got Representative Ackerman here.
On this bill?
Another bill. And one more. Actually, we've got a bunch of representatives. Which one are you on, Floyd?
Chair, I'm here on two of them. That's the work session.
Okay.
2733 and 2736.
Okay. Let's. Anybody have pressing appointments?
We are on the floor at 30.
Okay.
Oh.
Okay. Work session 2733. Who's doing this one, Kelly?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. House Bill 2733 comes to you from Representative Przanski. It organizes provisions relating to venue and violation cases. You may remember several weeks ago we had discussions about the city of Colbert, where it was citing people for traffic offenses, not only outside the city of Colbert, but outside the county. And due to a glitch in the law, they are able to do that, and this bill would correct that.
All right. Great. No amendments?
Chair, members of the committee, no amendments.
All right. 2733. Senator Farioli?
Mr. Chairman, I move House Bill 2733A to the floor.
All right. Senator Farioli moves House Bill.
Mr. Chairman.
2733A and goes to the floor of the Senate with due pass recommendation. Any additional discussion?
Well, Mr. Chair, I just want to know how it is that Representative Prozanski keeps finding these glitches in the law, but I'm glad that he does. And he brings them forward.
He's a very smart and articulate man.
I think that must be it.
Further discussion? Any objections to the motion? Motion passes. Thank you very much. Floyd, who would you like to have carry this?
Oh, this is Coburn. This is Coburn Part 2.
Senator
I want to carry this.
Work session, 2736.
Yes. Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. House Bill 2736 comes to you from Representative Prozanski, creates a crime of interference with a firefighter emergency medical technician and classifies the crime as a Class A misdemeanor. No amendments before the committee.
All right, 2736, we are at a work session. Anybody have any questions or issues with this one?
You know, I should probably look at my notes from the last one.
Okay. Give you a couple of seconds here. Who else? Any other? Do you have a bill in here today? Which one's yours?
2581.
No, behind.
I'm with the.
Oh, you're on the same one? Okay, all right, great, great, great.
Okay, I remember what this bill was. Representative Prozanski gave an example of riots and fires at the U of O, and the firefighters attempted to put out the fires, and people were throwing bottles at them. Okay.
All right.
That makes sense.
Are you okay with disciplining them?
Yeah, the crowd. Yeah.
Well, the ones that are interfering.
Yeah, the ones who are interfering.
Senator Rico.
Hang'em High Walker is on a roll.
Yeah, the judges are going to be calling.
All right, Senator Ferriola or Senator Walker, anybody want
to
move this bill?
Chair, I move 2736 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Ferriola moves Senate Bill, House Bill 2736.
House Bill.
Thank
2736
to the floor of the Senate with a due pass recommendation. Discussion? Any objections? There are no objections. Motion passes. Floyd, have a nice day. God bless you. who wants to carry this bill? Senator Starr, will you want to carry
yes,
the crime bill?
Yeah.
Okay, Senator Starr will carry that.
Tough on crime.
Now we're going to go to 2581. Open a work session on that. Representative Farr, Representative Ackerman, you want to come forward, or do you need to? And Council, why don't you tell us what the amendments that we have?
Sure. Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, if you recall, House Bill 2581 is a process by which municipalities can petition the courts to have the regularity of certain actions determined by the court. What the amendment does is it requires that, or it simply states that the section being amended does not by itself create a justiciable controversy where there is not one. And what does that mean? You will have seen the memo that I prepared previously on courts are supposed to hear justiciable controversies. Traditionally, that involves a case that has a question of fact and law, or fact and or law, and usually two different parties. There are two amendments here. I drafted a First Amendment that required two different parties, but it was my understanding after a discussion with the folks from Eugene that, and I agree, that not all justiciable controversies require two different parties. There are certain cases like a quiet title action for a piece of property where you're essentially going, the claimant is saying to the world, I own this property. If you think you own it, come forward now, forever hold your peace. Presumably, in such a case, nobody would come forward usually. That action does not involve two different parties. So I just wanted to limit the amendment to requiring that there be a justiciable controversy, but recognize that in some limited cases, there might not actually be an opposing party.
That's right. The A5, Mr. Chair?
That would
Chair.
Be the 5, I believe.
And what? I don't have another 7.
I'm sorry. The 4 is just said at the end, just also required two parties, so the 4s are not the ones we're working off of now.
Okay.
It should just be the 5.
All right. Any of you gentlemen have anything to say? I think we had a conversation about whether or not this would preclude another party from coming in at a later date that has a legitimate controversy that could, I believe, be brought. Is that correct?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I also discussed this at length with the proponents, and we're trying to think of a good example to give you some clarity on this issue. And the one that we came up with was assume that a city decided to build a wastewater treatment facility and filed a petition with the court saying, we want to make sure we have authority to do this. Somebody comes forward and they argue to the city or to the court, no, they don't have the authority to do this. There's now a justiciable controversy. There is a question of law in front of the court. There are two parties in this case. The court decides in favor of the municipality and says, yes, they do have the authority to do that. The wastewater treatment facility gets built, and let's say it smells bad, and the neighbors file a nuisance action against the wastewater treatment facility. They could not, in that nuisance action, argue, hey, the city didn't have authority to build the wastewater treatment plant. That has been decided, and contrary to the memorandum that Representative Ackerman sent, there doesn't need to be a relationship between the two parties that argued that point previously, the authority point. However, the people who are complaining of the nuisance, assuming they actually suffered damage, would be able to argue the point, we've suffered damage, please compensate us or fix the problem so it's not causing a nuisance in our area. So that's the distinction. They wouldn't be, and that's this non-mutual offensive claim preclusion, that they wouldn't be able to argue the issue of the authority, but they would be able to argue the issue of damages.
Okay. Questions?
Mr. Chairman, the issue that I've wrestled with a little bit is my belief that municipalities or other entities that have this new authority to essentially confer with a different branch of government prior to taking action, which on the face of it isn't all bad. I wish we had something similar with the federal agencies, especially the natural resource agencies. But what would preclude the city from essentially recruiting a straw person with a relatively weak series of claims about issues to become the adversarial party in sort of a friendly lawsuit to lay at rest several issues that might be, in fact, brought by another party in a much more adversarial and much more controversial and perhaps a much more justiciable action. In other words, recruit a straw party with a weak case and a kind of a who prepares, in fact, not a fully adversarial action and prosecutes that action in a tepid manner. You know, in order to get a favorable decision from the court, and certainly sweetheart case.
That would be thinking like a politician.
Well, that would be thinking like a city council or a county commission, I think.
Mr. Ackerman, excuse me, Representative Ackerman, do you have a...
Yes, I just have a couple of brief comments, Chairman and members of the committee. First, with respect to the Dash 5 amendments, I think they are a needed addition to the bill. They, I think, put another sign up before the court to make sure. The courts are very, very jealous about their jurisdiction. They're very, very aware of their jurisdiction. And some of the first questions they ask of lawyers in a case, do I have jurisdiction to hear this matter? Particularly in situations where you're challenging the authority or the constitutionality of the municipality or a governing body's action, these issues arise all the time. So really what I'm saying is that the amendment is an accurate statement of existing case law, but having codified it, I think gives the court a better idea to revisit that particular issue. And in revisiting that issue, it would determine whether we had real parties before the court or whether we had straw men there, which it really has been the practice in my research of years ago that these cases were pretty much formatted. There's pretty much a fraud upon a court where the municipality would go out and find a couple of citizens to file a citizen's lawsuit, and then it would just lay back and let the judge rule in favor of the governing body. I think in this particular situation and in today's environment, that before, of course, a municipality or a governing body would embark upon such a project, you would have public hearings, you would have publicity, you certainly have free flow of information through the Internet, and you're more likely now, I think, to get real parties to follow these things, and the bill would give them a unique opportunity to really litigate the case and form a justiciable controversy and get the authority or the constitutionality of the municipality's actions decided up front before there's a vast expenditure of public money. I agree with counsel that my statement was not correct about the binding effect on certain non-parties. Let me give you just another quick example. Let's assume that the municipality is going to construct a electrical generating facility, and it does not know whether it has the authority to do that. And it files such a claim, and a real party comes into court and says, a ratepayer group, for example, or ratepayers. And again, the court rules in the city's favor. Three years down the line, some ratepayers file a suit and want refunds because of their electric payments, because now claiming that the municipality does not have the authority to cite the project or impose the fees. They would probably be bound by the earlier litigation. And I think that's correct for two reasons. There were real parties before the court. The issue was fully litigated. And secondly, we have to have some termination of litigation. And I think that telling these folks that they are bound because there was a real case decided against them is not unusual in the court system. It is also a way to terminate and limit continuous litigation over the same thing. So I support the amendments, and of course, be happy to answer any questions you may have.
Anybody have any additional questions, Senator?
Comments only from when and if we go into work session.
Right.
I mean, we are in work session. I still don't like the bill. Mr. Chair, I don't like the amendment. I mean, I think the amendment makes it better. But I raised these issues last time when we met on the 21st that I just think it's claims preclusion, and I don't like that. I think there are opportunities where people might not have information that the city is about to embark on some new project, and I spoke with Representative Jensen and Representative Shetterly to inquire as to why they voted no on this bill in committee, and they confirmed the same reasons I feel like I need to vote no today, even though my transit district, my mayor, my city likes this bill. You folks have legal counsel. Cities have legal counsel. Transit districts have legal counsel. That's what they're paid good money for. They're paid really quite well, actually. The city of Eugene pays their attorneys very well. And there's a separation of powers here. I don't like the fact that the court can come in and make a decision beforehand about what the city's ready to do and whether it's legal or not. I think the city needs to make their own analysis, and they need to go forward. And then when people have concerns, they can raise those concerns. So it's a fundamental variation of the way the law works, and I have a problem with it.
All right. Given that, I've got to make sure I've got sufficient votes to move the bill. So anybody else is opposed, let me know. Speak now or forever hold your peace.
Looks like I'm the only one who feels that way. But
you could ultimately prove to be correct.
Well, we have a lot of controversy in Eugene, and they're an active community, and I just don't want to preclude the opportunity for the residents of my community to have their full say in what's going on.
That's fair.
Senator Ringo.
Well, that's a comment. I think claim preclusion is a tricky thing, and it cuts both ways. On the one hand, you want people to have their day in court. You want people to be able to challenge what the city's doing or what another entity's doing. But on the other hand, there comes a point where finality is what you need, where something's been decided and you can move forward with a decision. So it's the tricky thing is to strike that right balance. I'm not sure that this upsets the balance.
All right. Anybody want to move the A5 amendment?
Mr. Chair, I move the A5 amendments.
Senator Starr moves the adoption of the A5 amendment to House Bill 2581. Discussion? Objections to the motion? To the adoption?
No, I think that makes it better.
That motion passes.
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 2581 as amended to the floor with the due pass recommendation.
Thank you. Senator Starr moves House Bill 2581 to the floor as amended by this committee with the due pass recommendation. Discussion?
Just a comment for the record, Mr. Chair. I am a little concerned that there will be strongman type actions by communities, but I'm convinced by Representative Ackerman that
the court will look for those issues and in the preliminary proceedings make sure that the case that's brought before the court is a case of substance and merit. So I'll support the bill.
All right. Thank you very much. Senator Walker.
I'm still opposed for all the reasons I stated.
Senator Ringo Ferrioli, Star and Menace. The motion passes and wants to carry this fine piece of legislation.
Okay.
Senator Starr will carry this. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Gentlemen. All right. Let's see who's up next.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. If you remember, House Bill 2066 is essentially the court's housekeeping bill for this session. It does many things. We heard it before it was being held. There's a currently a -A18 amendment. And Mr. Swank, I see is in the audience. You can correct me if I'm wrong. I believe that the -A18 amendment fixes the oath with respect to all the judges, so it makes it uniform for everybody.
All right, Fred.
Chair Menace, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Brad Swank. I'm Special Counsel Government Relations for the Oregon Judicial Department. -A18 is in the House. The House amended House Bill 2066 to make the oaths for judges statutory. As the bill was originally introduced, they would have been established by a rule by the Chief Justice. They wanted them to be in the statute. As the bill passed the House and came over here, it was noticed that there was some conflicts in the language that they had adopted, and one point hadn't been covered there. It created a problem with senior judges, so they put a separate oath for senior judges so they could, because they only have to swear once when they're done as senior judges, and it clarified, and you'll see in subsection 5 there, that the judges only have to take an oath. For temporary judges, essentially, they only have to take an oath once each term that they're appointed. They don't have to take the oath before each time they sit as a pro tem judge, because they're appointed for 3-year terms, and then during that 3 years, they're given up to 1-year appointments to serve as a pro tem. It's just to reduce the amount of paperwork, and because we suspect if we didn't put it in, some of the free-thinking citizens of the state of Oregon would bring a legal suit to challenge it. So we added that language to resolve that issue.
All right. Great. Now, are all of the judges in the state going to have to go back and be sworn again under this provision?
Chair Menace, members of the committee, the oaths, the Supreme Court justices, of course, have an oath that is set in the Constitution. They've all taken that oath. The other justices, the language that's in here reflects the oaths that other judges took, and we don't believe that anybody would need to take an oath. They all retook oaths last fall, and this language reflects those, but if they do, they'll know where to find them. It'll be easy enough to do.
All right, great. All right, we're in work session. Anybody want to help out here?
No, Mr. Chair, I move the -A18 amendments to House Bill 2066.
Okay, great. Sorry for interrupting you. Senator Walker moves House Bill, the A18 amendment to House Bill 2066. Is there a discussion on the motion? Is there any objection to the motion? The motion passes.
And then, Mr. Chair, I would move House Bill 2066A as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
All right. Senator Walker moves House Bill 2066A and Gross as amended by this committee to the floor of the Senate with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Is there any objection to the motion? No objection. Passes. And Senator Ringo, would you carry that one?
Sure.
Just in the event that you might someday become a judge.
No, I can't.
It's
not because of DUIs.
I was just going to ask you about that one.
All right. House Bill 2682. We need a public hearing on this. This is a bill that actually I originally not wanted to hear or held up because I was a little concerned about whether or not loan originators return documents to clients in one form or another. And John McCulley was very good in finding federal regulations and all kinds of material that indicate that, in fact, they are required to do so under federal law. So I'm satisfied that we don't need to enact specific statutory provisions to duplicate federal law. But John?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is John McCulley, representing the Oregon Association of Mortgage Brokers. You held a hearing on this bill on April 29th, and I'm resubmitting to you the testimony that I distributed to the committee at that time. And very briefly, to bring you up to speed on what this bill does two primary things. One, it requires that insurance agents who are full-time mortgage loan originators comply with the education requirements that every other full-time mortgage loan originator has to comply with. The second part of the bill is that it requires criminal background checks for people who are mortgage loan originators. As far as we know, there is no opposition to the bill, and we believe it's ready to move forward. And I have to say, Mr. Chair, in response to your comments, I've come to appreciate the inquiries you had about the industry, and tell you that based on your questions, we are encouraging our education people to become very involved in informing mortgage brokers their obligations under the Graham Leach Bliley and the FTC rules that have since been adopted regarding protection of personal private information. So we believe that even though we may have been frustrated as an organization in moving forward on this bill, the delays have allowed us to, I think, put in clearer perspective some things that we need to do in the profession. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
That's a great comment. How frustrated were you?
I wasn't too frustrated, but, you know, I was getting a little anxious as the calendar rolled along.
All right. Okay. Any questions for Mr. McCulley?
Don't you just love doing research, Mr. McCulley?
I enjoy the research, Senator Walker, yes.
I'm just a research nut, and I appreciate when people do their research and come here fully prepared.
All right, good. Any further questions? All right, let's do a session on this thing. There are no amendments to this bill.
Then, Mr. Chair, I would move House Bill 2682A to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
All right, Senator Walker moves House Bill 2682 and goes to the floor of the Senate with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Any objections to Senator Walker's motion? If there are no objections, the motion passes. Who hasn't been assigned a bill yet today?
Ferrioli and myself.
Well, you're carrying one. You're doing the
Coburger. Oh, I'm sorry. I'm doing Coburger. Then Senator Ferrioli has not carried
one. Ferrioli, would you be so kind as to
carry this? I will, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you very much. And we're going to be in recess until 9:05 when we can satisfy the 24-hour rule and deal with the amendments we talked about yesterday on House Bill 3389. So,
Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 3389A comes to you from the Committee on Judiciary, provides additional means of establishing a gun control substance and prosecutions involving controlled substances. You have the A3 amendments in front of you, and these were worked out by Mr. Dugan and Susan Russell, who's now being represented by Ingrid Swenson of the Oregon Criminal Defense Lawyers Association. And these are basically the amendments that you saw yesterday with one that we took out the delete lines 20 and 22, and we've added an emergency clause. Basically what it says, when a controlled substance is at issue in a criminal proceedings before a grand jury, at a preliminary hearing, in the proceedings of the district attorney's information for purposes of early disposition program, it is prima facie evidence of identity control substance if one of these field tests has been done. You've heard testimony during the hearing about the field test that would be performed. It would not be admissible in a trial.
All right. Great. And Mike and Ingrid, you want to come forward? Mike.
I think it'd still be admissible because it's admissible now. So it's not going to be prima facie evidence. I might even, by the way, just to
sure.
It's not considered. The weight of the evidence would be something up to the jury or judge in a trial. In a trial, we're going to have the determinative test, as you know.
Right. Okay. Ingrid?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Ingrid Swenson, Oregon Criminal Defense Lawyers Association. We're satisfied that we understand the effort is to save some money here, and this should probably do that without seriously impacting the fairness of the judicial proceeding.
Great. Thank you. I want to thank you all for working together on this, too, and particularly Susan, who was apparently going to a new job.
What?
So, working in the Federal Public Defender's Office. So. Hmm. You may see her.
Better pay.
All right.
The federal
Chair,
system.
I apologize for wearing the same clothes, but they put me up at a motel overnight so I could be here. I did hang in the shower. So
we're happy you're here. All right. Anybody want to move the A3 amendment?
Mr. Chair, I would be happy to move the A3 amendment to House Bill 3389.
All right. Senator Walker moves the adoption of the A3 amendment to House Bill 3389. And Senator Ferriola, these are the consensus amendments between the parties on the issue.
On 389?
Yes, yes, sir.
Thank you. 3389.
Any further discussion? Any objection to the motion? Motion passes.
And, Mr. Chair, seeing no other amendments, even though Mr. Dugan is here and always generates more amendments, as your comment indicated yesterday, I would move House Bill 3389 in gross as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
All right. Senator Walker moves House Bill 3389 in gross to the floor of the Senate with a due pass recommendation as amended by this committee. Any discussion on the motion? Is there any objection to the motion? There's no objection. The motion passes. And anybody want to carry that? I'll carry it. If not, okay, I'll carry it. And Monday, committee, is our function, so...
Yes.
Party time?
Yes, it is. Party, party, hearty.
Are we meeting at 8 on Monday again?
Yes, we are.
8:20?
8 or whatever.